intercepts the man.
Are you kidding?
This means Marshall. That's the ball. He
didn't cross off of it.
That pass. Oh, get out of Price.
Backing it away. Gianca. In a long.
Score. Oh, look at us. Matthew Gilmour. Well, that's your dash.
Right in front of the number one. A save that was by Carey Price.
And now a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup.
Welcome to the 2-4. This is our podcast on the Montreal Bias. I'm Zach Vanoss, along with my trusty co-host Sean O'Neill. How are you doing this afternoon, Sean?
Not too bad, not too bad. I'm in a better mood for this podcast than I would have been if we'd done it as originally scheduled about a week ago.
Yeah, no kidding. That's why we had to give it some time. We wanted to do a podcast last week, obviously, but then Perry Pern, he said we couldn't do one. Blame Perry.
I blame Perry for a lot of things.
As you should, evidently. The Montreal Canadiens with Perry Pern as an assistant coach were a terrible hockey team. And since his firing, 3-0 against what could be argued are two of our top three rivals in the NHL.
Yeah. So let's who knew it was his fault all along?
But, I know, but you know, obviously Gauthier, a genius, knew exactly what the problem is. He's never made a mad moon in his life, and this just goes along to prove that Perry Byrne was the problem. But let's get into it seriously as we do our opening 20 here. That is the first question. Was the turnaround simply coincidental, or was it because of Perry Pern that the Habs are struggling?
We've had fun since Pern got the axe, sort of, you know, saying that he's intellectually and morally bankrupt and that everything was his fault. But I tend to think it was a coincidence. I hate that move. You don't blame the assistant. I think it did. Maybe it was a bit of a wake-up call, and you know, it was a shot across the bow. But I got to think it was a coincidence. Sorry, this team was bound to put things together at some point.
Well, I think the point you raised there is relevant in that perhaps it was something of a shot across the bow for the team, a warning that their play wasn't up to par and they needed to be better. And that,
yeah,
I
think there's some validity to that, but. You know, I mean, Perry Pern's been around the league for a long time. He's a highly respected assistant coach. I think it was a bit of a BS move by the front office. And, you know, people are going to say that it worked because we won 3 in a row since, but I do tend to think that's a coincidence.
No, I think it's completely coincidental. And I, you know, it may have nothing at all to do with the firing. And as you said, there it was questionable by the front office, that move, and we'll get into that later. I don't agree with the way it went down at all, for one thing. I just don't think that's the way it should have been handled. You don't fire a coach 2 hours before a game. I don't care if you think it's a strategic and clever wake-up call. It's just not something you're supposed to do. And I don't think an organization as highly respected as the Canadiens, who have done so much with so much class over their 100-plus-year history, you don't just let a guy go like that. I mean, we're just finding out now that he got a contract extension about 3 weeks prior on top of that. It doesn't gel well in my head that this is the way that it went down. Did it work? Maybe. Was it the problem? Definitely not. I don't think you can't put the Habs start on Perry Pern. He was here last year. It's not like he's a brand new guy that was brought in. But at the same, I didn't like how that went down. We'll get into that later in the 2-4 though.
Number two, which Habs team is closer to the quote unquote real Canadiens? The team that started the season 1-5-2, or the team that we've seen win 3 straight?
Yeah, this I put up today. This is the survey question on the MontrealBias.com right now. Is which team, or you can also side with the way my opinion swings on this one. I think the real team's somewhere in the middle. I think you're looking at an accurate situation as far as the Bruins are really struggling right now. Ilya Bryzgalov admitted that he can't make a save right now to save his life. And so the Canadiens got not lucky, but, you know, for once, some things went their way where their goalie was struggling in the case of Philadelphia, where the entire team is trying to get past the Stanley Cup hangover in the case of the Boston Bruins. So, I mean, we also didn't see a team that just slayed two giant dragons. They're dragons, at least, that are struggling for the time being. So I think the Canadiens fall somewhere in the middle of the team that got off to the atrocious start and the team that, if you just looked at the teams that we've beat, if you looked at the schedule before the season started and said, you know, what's going to be the roughest, toughest games of the first month, you'd say, well, look, we got Philly, we got Boston. Boston, that's going to be a rough run. If you told me at the beginning of the season we're going to go 3-0 over that stretch, I'd think, well, this team's in fine form. So I think it's somewhere between those two extremes.
Yeah, that's probably accurate. I mean, you mentioned that both Boston and Philly, to a certain extent, are struggling. And, I mean, I think everyone still agrees that those are two of the best teams in the East. And I think it just underscores a point that got lost. You know, I lost track of this point when we were struggling, too. But it's early in the season. It's been a bit up and down. I think they're somewhere in between, but I think they are closer to the team we've seen in the last three or four games. They've been playing their brand of hockey. You know, Carey's looked good. The offense is chipping in enough goals. You know, obviously they're not going to reel off 3, 4, 5, 6 game win streaks all season long, but I think this is closer to the team that we really are than the team that we saw really stumble out of the gate.
All right, number three, what is the biggest factor in the Habs turnaround? We both seem to agree that it wasn't Perry Byrne. So what is the big factor that has allowed the Habs to be 3-0 over the last three games against, you know, what on normal circumstances are very good teams?
I think, you know, the offense certainly hasn't overwhelmed anyone in terms of goals per game, but the offense is finally clicking. And, you know, they're getting contributions from different guys. Cammy's chipping in, Gionta's chipping in, Cole's chipping in, Eller's playing better. And, you know, with Price playing the way he usually does, you really only need 2-3 goals a night, 4 goals a night to win, and they've finally been getting that, you know. Early in the season, if it was just a weird start to the season, you know, if Price gave up 6, they'd only score 5. If Price only gave up 1, they wouldn't score at all. So I think the offense is finally starting to find a bit of a rhythm.
Let me give you some numbers here, and this comes courtesy of the website CareyPrice.com. The numbers game for his amazing week in which Carey was given the first star on the week. 2 is the number of goals scored by the Bruins against him. Legitimate goals, because Thomas Plekanec put in an own goal there. 4, total number of goals Carey allowed in 3 games. His GAA over those games were 1.33, 950 save percentage in the 3 games. He's 15-4-2 now against the Bruins lifetime. We're going to get back to that. And, you know, 102 now career wins, making him the 4th youngest goalie in NHL history to reach 100 victories. And 3 star selections for Carey Price this week. He got first star against Boston on Saturday, 2nd star against Philly, and on Wednesday against Boston on Thursday, he got 2nd star as well. I would say, yes, everything else is clicking, but I would say Carey Price playing the game that he's very capable of was the biggest difference, because if he's only allowing 1 goal per game against Toronto, against Florida, against Buffalo, those are all wins as well. So I think it's not the only part, but as we've said all season, as Carey goes, so go the Habs. And when Carey has an amazing week, the Habs go 3-0 against arguably some of the best teams in the Eastern Conference, although their records don't indicate that right now.
Yeah, fair enough. Number 4 is Jacques Martin off the hot seat.
Oh, yeah. For all the reasons we just said. I mean, the team just went 3-0 against what is generally, and I keep saying this, generally considered two of the probably the elite clubs in the East, two of the teams that were most picked to go to the Stanley Cup Final as the Eastern Conference representatives. So, yeah, you go, you win 3. I think his job is safe. I think he was probably safe all along. I don't want him to be the coach, and I've written articles on it on Montreal Bias saying why I don't think he should be this team's coach. But I think as far as Gauthier is concerned, and Jeff Molson probably not going to step in and go above Gauthier right now, yeah, his job's safe.
Yeah, it is for the time being. You know, I don't really take anything back that I said about Jacques Martin last week.
No, same here.
I still don't think he's the right fit. He's not a terribly inspiring coach. But, yeah, I mean, 3 straight wins is obviously going to get you off the hot seat. Now, we'll see where we are in a month's time. If this is just sort of a brief uptick and they go back to struggling, obviously it becomes a conversation again, but for the time being he's certainly off the hot seat, I think, you know, at least until Christmas.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not sitting here though, like you say, the tune hasn't changed in my opinion of Jacques Martin. I still don't necessarily think that he is the right coach, but you can't fire him at this point. I think he did save his job. If they dropped those 3 games that they ended up winning, then yeah, his job had to be in jeopardy, right?
Oh, yeah, and I think, you know, everyone did the same thing. They looked at the schedule and noticed that we had 5 days off in a row. And the thinking really was, if you don't win at least one of those three, or maybe even two of those three, that he's probably gone. But obviously that's a moot point now that we've won three in a row.
So would we have been better off to lose those games?
Maybe in the long run, although I'm happy we won, but I still don't think he's the man for the job.
I agree. We'll save that deep conversation for another time. Number five, I'm keeping track properly this week, eh? Last week I had trouble with the numbers. How many goals will Travis Moen, leading scorer on the Montreal Canadiens in terms of goals, how many is he going to notch this year?
Well, he's already got four on the season, I believe.
He had six last year.
He had six last year?
Yeah, and eight is his all-time high.
Yeah. I think he'll probably settle right around eight or nine, which I'll take. I mean, I was expecting four or five heading into the season. So, you know, if he chips in five, six extra goals, that's a bonus. So anything really from this point forward is a bonus.
Am I crazy, though, to think he looks better?
No, he looks really good. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the line combinations or if he's just found that spark somehow, but he looks really good.
It's not like if he had four goals at this point and, you know, one of them was an empty netter or, you know, they just were kind of weird coincidental goals that he got a lucky bounce. But the four goals he scored have all been very legitimate goals and goals I didn't even know he had in his skill set prior. So yeah. I'm gonna say this is going to be a career year for Travis Moen. 12 goals. He's one third of the way there.
He is one third of the way there. And, you know, even sort of role players, grinders like Moen, they'll have those career years where they chip in 12, 13, maybe even 15 goals.
Yeah.
We saw Glenn Metropolit do it. It's certainly not inconceivable that Moen could have a 12 or even 15 goal season.
I don't think Metropolit and Moen are the same type of player, though.
No, they're not. But in terms of just, you know, this sort of career third, fourth liner type guy who once in a while everything clicks.
I don't know. I think Moen's been a huge asset this year, and this all comes on the heels of you and I joking constantly of Moen being the most average player, and you could replace him by anybody, and yet he's stood up for players when need be. He's scored four goals, as we said, and he seemed to be kind of crucial, and that third line's interesting for Montreal right now. We'll get into that a little bit later.
Yeah, that's
a really
interesting line.
Yep.
Number six, switching off the Habs, but sticking in the Northeast, Toronto Maple Leafs, are they for real?
I live in Toronto, as I said last time. And this city believes this team is for real. And this city, in my experience, is very often right on tune with how good their hockey team is. So I have to say, based on what I'm hearing on the streetcar, yeah, this team is will probably win the Stanley Cup.
I think it's an inevitability at this point. I mean, look, they look really good.
No, they do. They do look good.
It's only a matter of time before, you know, something started working there and they at least became a borderline playoff team, which is what I think they are. You know, Kessel's not going to keep up this pace all season long.
Well, no. If he does, he'll score 100 goals.
Exactly. You know, I'm still not 100% sold on Reimer, and, you know, who knows how long he'll be out with the injury. So, you know, I think they'll be in the mix, though. I don't think this is another 12th or 13th place finish for them. No, I think they'll be right in there.
Yeah, this isn't the last place team that we've seen in years past. You know, it's probably a bubble team. So yes, it's safe to say that these aren't the real Leafs per se. That, you know, they're not one of the top three elite clubs in the Eastern Conference. I just don't believe that. But are they for real as a better team, an improved team? Yes.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think they win the division, but they could. This could be the year they finally crack that top eight.
They'll be so excited. The fans in Toronto are going to go absolutely crazy if this team makes the playoffs. They've been waiting so long for that. And they really believe right now, though, that they've got themselves a contender. I didn't hear that, but my girlfriend came back the other day from the corner store, not to call it the Depp, because it's not a Depp in this town, and on the radio, she said they were talking. One guy said, I don't want to say it, but maybe this team could do it. And you're like, shit. Oh, come on. Ridiculous.
Yeah, it's always fun when they get their hopes up. And I think they're going to come crashing back to Earth pretty soon. But they're a legitimate bubble team for what that's
worth. Legitimate bubble team. Get excited, Toronto.
Start printing the t-shirts.
Legitimate bubble team. I can hear the chant at the ACC now. I better not eat these words. God, I can't live in this city if this is a real contender. Are you want to? What do we got next? Are the Boston Bruins in trouble? Essentially the same thing. Are these the real Boston Bruins?
These aren't the real Boston Bruins. Now, they've got an obvious case of the Stanley Cup hangover.
In many cases, a literal hangover.
No kidding. I think they're in trouble in the sense that they're not as good as they were last year. I certainly don't see them as one of the elite teams, but they'll rebound. They're still my pick to win the division. They're still one of the four or five best teams in the East. I think they'll claw their way out of this, but they got to start making a move pretty soon because they really haven't looked good.
No, they haven't looked good at all. And clearly, I mean, a big factor in Montreal beating them on Saturday night was their own frustration. I mean, they were clearly very agitated, I mean, by PK in a sense, but also just by the whole situation, making it very easy for PK Subban to get under their skin even more than he already does. And I mean, the dumb penalties they took. Claude Julien was clearly very, very frustrated with his organization, and the whole team was frustrated with themselves, and they don't know what to do right now. But no, these aren't the real Boston Bruins. I mean, essentially, this is the same team that just won the Stanley Cup. Although, as with Carey Price and the Canadiens, as Tim Thomas goes, so too do go the Bruins, I think. And if he doesn't have the season he had last year, which, I mean, he's probably not. Nobody's really ever had that season before. But if he's not a Vezina-quality goalie once more, then the Bruins find themselves back in the middle of the thing with, you know, with the Canadiens, and, as we said, maybe it seems with the Maple Leafs now, who are looking like a middle-of-the-pack playoff bubble team.
Fair enough. Number 8, how would you grade Carey Price's performance thus far?
Thus far? That's a tougher question. On a ABC scale?
Sure, whichever scale you want.
I'll use
thumbs
the ABC
up,
scale.
1 through 10 stars?
Nah, the thumbs up two is too easy. I'm going to give him... I got to give him the B+ at this point. Off to a weak start, but then, you know, first star of the week. It's hard to argue that he seems to be back. Yeah, I'll give him the B+.
Yeah, if we're giving grades, that's probably where I'd grade him out at as well.
I was hoping you would take something completely uncomparable. So there'd be no frame of reference to what we decide on.
Obviously he was great the last week. Even the first little stretch, he wasn't stellar, but I think a lot of the blame was misplaced. I mean, he was playing behind an absolutely depleted defensive core. The defense was not carrying its share of the burden, and he let in some softies. He had a couple of weak goals, but I really think he was playing almost as good as could be expected in that first stretch. So I think he's been really good, and, you know, Markov is maybe coming back, and, you know, the defense, whether he's back or not, looks like it's rounding into shape, and he looks like he's back right on top of his game. So B+, A-, and I think it's, you know, I think the worst is out of the way.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't even terrible over that stretch. He didn't steal a game for us.
He didn't steal a game, but in the rankings of who deserved blame for that early season swoon, he was pretty low on my list.
Yeah, although, on the other hand, I did give him a lot of credit for how far they've come. I mean, when he's great, we're hard to beat, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, you're going to have to, if you can't get two goals past Carey, which, when he's on, seems to be the way it goes, it's going to be hard to beat any team whose goalie's not allowing more than a couple of goals. All right. And I'm already knowing where you're going with this one. Have you noticed Scott Gomez hasn't been playing?
I have noticed, actually.
And not in a good way, I'm assuming.
Yes, in a not good way. I mean, I've frankly given up hope. You know, everyone's still waiting and waiting and saying, oh, this is the season he turns it around. This is the week he turns it around. But just at this point, he hasn't shown me really anything since he's gotten here. Or even before that, even when he was in New York, you know, this is the player he is at this point. There's no turnaround coming. He's not going to rediscover the magic he had in the early part of his career in New Jersey. This is who he is. He's a third line, you know, 35 to 45 point per season type player.
But wouldn't you be happy with at least, okay, happy is the wrong word. Would you accept if he returned even to form that he had two seasons ago?
It'd be an improvement at this point. You know, I mean, at least at that point,
that's the most we can expect.
Yeah, that's the most we can expect. You know, the first year, my thought was he'll never come close to living up to the contract, and that is an issue because there's a salary cap, but if you put the contract to the side, at least he's a good-ish player. you know, he plays a role. Now I can't even say that about him. Now he's just a really, really, really average player who's making superstar money.
Well, he's making insane money, and I mean, I know that hurts him from time to time. But, you know, in terms of people's opinion, but, well, I wrote an article about, I finally came off the Scott Gomez train, and seeing this team without him, I used to think there was an element missing without him. Lars Eller has come along far enough, and you know, you could go out and get another four if you put him in the AHL, and this injury is proven. I think that there's no need for him to be in this lineup. Now, like you said, I noticed he wasn't playing, but in the other sense, I really didn't notice. There was no loss to the team that Scott Gomez wasn't playing.
No, they didn't miss a beat. And, you know, just at this point, I just don't think it's going to happen.
I'm going to have to agree with you.
And finally, number 10, who has been the team MVP thus far? Who's impressed you the most?
Well, team MVP thus far is Price, for all the reasons I said earlier. I mean, all of our wins have come from big Carey Price games. Who's impressed me the most, though, is, as I was saying before, Lars Eller. I mean,
yeah.
When it all comes together for Lars, it's going to be fantastic. Because he's in the right spots now. He seems to be understanding. When he's playing center, it helps a lot. I think he understands where he's meant to be a little bit more. And, you know, he also had some severe miscues in the game against Boston. But he looks a lot better than the pretty much non-existent Lars Eller that was on the ice last year, who rarely showed anything, in my opinion. I mean, he looked very, very average, and I didn't even see the talent that had been spoken of. Now you can see it's there, and he's one or two steps away from, you know, being the player that he could potentially be. But there's no one else that I kind of sat back and taken more note of this season than Lars Eller and the strides he seems to have made.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, he didn't look bad last year. He just looked young.
He didn't look anything.
The team rushed him in to justify the Halak trade. He should have been in the AHL last year. Honestly, I mean, he's been good this year, but he probably is still an AHL player. But, you know, we saw a couple of glimpses last season. They become more frequent this year. Like you said, I think he's in for a decent year, and I think give him a year or two, and he's a top six forward.
What about you? Who has been your MVP then?
Oh, Price. I mean, I don't know. You can't really go with anyone but Price. But like you, I've been really impressed by Eller.
All right. We're going to get off the Habs for a second. I want to, there's other issues to address in the NHL. There's been a controversy.
Name one
other issue besides the Montreal Canadiens. You know what? It's tough. It's hard to pay attention to anybody else. But there is one other thing that I wanted to talk to you, and this is a little bit of what that is.
If you having girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. I got the rat patrol on the cat patrol. Foes that want to make sure my cask is closed. Rat critics saves money, cash holes. I'm from the hood, stupid. What type of facts?
All right. We were texting back and forth about this today. When you're wondering about your Halloween costume or what costume you're going to wear to the arena, anything like that, and if the question is pondered and, you say, hey, that would be funny if I did it in blackface. Just don't. Rafi Torres, just don't. It's that simple, right?
It really is. Look, I don't know the guy. I don't think Rafi Torres is a raging racist. It's usually pretty harmless. It's just that there's no upside to it. Just don't do it.
That's all.
It's insensitive. It offends people, and probably with just cause, and just don't do it. There's a million Halloween costumes out there. You don't have to go in blackface.
No, there's absolutely no reason for it. I've never heard anyone do it and defend it in any way that made you think, oh, I see why this way it's not offensive. I mean, no, Rafi Torres, he went as Jay-Z for Halloween because he loves Jay-Z, which is fine to love Jay-Z. You should love Jay-Z. But at the same time, the costume's not meant to be offensive. It's meant as a tribute. And I heard people today defending Rafi Torres saying, yeah, but it was meant as a tribute. In no way is it racist. It's not meant to be offensive. It doesn't matter what it was meant to be. Historically, blackface does not have a positive history. That's all you need to know, is it's always going to be seen by offensive. So just don't do it. How many more times are we going to have to see this controversy pop up over people doing this?
Yeah, I'm not sure how the message hasn't quite resonated yet.
This is what I don't get.
Once a year, at least once every 2 years, someone does it, and you just kind of have to sigh and, you know, ask yourself, how have you not figured this out yet? That it's just probably not a good idea.
And we come from a culture in Quebec that is even a step behind everybody else, it seems to be, at least in the United States especially, but in English Canada as well, that this isn't something that's done. Because for some reason, French Quebec has less heard the message that you're not supposed to do it. So, I mean, was it last Halloween we had two guys showing up at the Bell Center in PK Subban blackface? Once again, I'm sure they love PK. I'm sure it's meant as a tribute, but it's not received that way, people. Just don't do it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, that is probably a cultural thing to a certain extent.
Oh, no, it's completely cultural.
You know, it was never, you know, it's not inherently offensive in and of itself. It's just the time it reckons back to, which is obviously more of an issue in the States than it would be in Quebec. But
the word reckons back to about the same time as well.
I reckon it does. But, yeah, I mean, just don't do it. It's not that hard to
figure. I know, that's all it is. Just don't do it. It's just, I'm not offended. I'm just sitting here. I can't believe that over and over again somebody manages to do this. Oh, no, Rafi,
exactly. I'm not offended either, and I'm not big on over PC-ness all the time, but it does offend people, and, you know, rightfully so, probably. And
no, but it's just so easy to not.
There's a risk of offending someone in that way. Just, you know, don't do it.
Yeah.
Like, we've said it 20 times.
No, just
obviously we need to get the message out there.
Listen, one more time. If tonight, because we're recording this on Halloween.
We are.
If tonight you were thinking of going as something that involved darkening your skin at all, don't do it. Do we drive that message home enough now?
Well, we'll find out in about a year's time.
All right. Let's get back to the Habs. We were talking about this Perry Pern thing. I've given my opinion on it. What did you think overall just about the way that it happened?
Obviously, the timing was bizarre. You don't fire your assistant coach, a guy who's been a pretty loyal soldier for a couple of years now. You don't fire him 90 minutes before a game. I understand what they were trying to do. I get it. And maybe, like we said, maybe to a certain extent it worked, but that's just a classless move. That's not the way you want to run your organization. And I just think firing assistant coaches in general is just kind of trying to take the easy way out. There's a lot of, you know, the media is unhappy, the fans are unhappy. We'll make a move, but not really. We'll try and, you know, fire a shot across the bow, but we don't want to do anything too drastic. If you're going to make a move, make a move. You know, fire Jacques Martin or make a big trade or fire Pierre Gauthier. Don't fire the assistant coach because it's not the assistant coach's fault.
This was Gauthier's move, though, right? He completely said it was all his decision.
Yeah. No, fair enough. But, I mean, I understand what they're trying to do. They're trying to create the illusion that the team's being proactive, but, you know,
what are we, stupid?
Well, yeah, sometimes.
Okay, I know there are a range of knowledge of fans out there, but let's face it. Montreal's a very, very knowledgeable fan base. How many people, when Perry Pern was fired, thought, oh, they've actually done something effective?
But it at least gets people to talk about that for 42 hours or 78 hours, and the heat's off Jacques Martin a little bit, and, you know, they win that game, and then they go on and win three in a row, and all of a sudden, you know, everyone's talking about Pern and talking about the win streak, and we're not talking about Jacques Martin and whether he's the right man for the job.
Yeah, but had they not fired Pern and still go out and get those three wins, nobody's talking about this anyways. It's the wins that made it irrelevant, not the firing of Perry Pern.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I think that's what it was. I think it was, you know, sort of a delay tactic, just try and buy some time and make it look as if we're doing something, and we're not ready to really shake up the situation yet, but let's rock the boat a little bit.
Well, I agree. I agree with you 100%. That's why I think it's a bullshit move.
Oh, I agree. I think it's ridiculous. You know, I've never seen a losing streak that's the assistant coach's fault.
Well, if the assistant coach has that much effect on your team to begin with, then right there, the whole structure of your team's messed up with. Like, you gotta, like, there's no way the assistant coach should be the guy who affects the team that much.
No, I mean, he was the fall guy because he was the easiest guy to let go of. That's really, they had to let go of someone. They weren't quite ready to get rid of Malthane. They weren't quite ready to make a big trade. They weren't ready to send Gomez down. So we'll fire the assistant coach.
Or let me ask you this, because obviously I've said what I think. Do you think Pierre Gauthier is the right GM for the team?
I'm willing to, you know, I don't want his head on the chopping block as much as I want to see Martin go. I think he's made some really good moves. I think he's made some really questionable moves. His track record overall, both in Montreal and elsewhere, is more positive than negative. And, you know, I don't think he's going to set the league on fire. I don't think he's one of the top five GMs in the league. When they hired him, it was basically the same reaction I had to the Martin hiring, which was, okay, you know, he's successful, but it's not a super inspiring choice. So like I said, I don't think he's one of the top guys in the league. I don't think we're going to win a cup with him.
But don't we deserve somebody better?
He's serviceable.
I don't want somebody serviceable.
No, neither do I, but I don't know if he's, you know, he's going to lose his job at some point. Both him and Martin, you know, there'll come a point where the team will lose a couple games in a row, whether it's this year or next year or the year after. They're not staying here long, long term. But, you know, I think after Gainey left, they just wanted a bit of stability, get someone to point the team in the right direction, and maybe the next guy we hire is the guy.
I'm sick of these serviceable guys. I mean, I love this team enough to have devoted an entire website to them. We manage to talk about them for an hour at least on this podcast every week. You know, we're texting, we're watching all the games. I don't want a guy who's serviceable. I don't want Jacques Martin who's giving me boring hockey. And I don't want a guy who's never going to make a splash, who's never going to go out and do, let's say, what they did in Vancouver, where they went and got Booth. Give me something to get excited about. Give me some moves now and then. I'm sick of this holding pattern that the Canadians seem to do year in, year out. I mean, besides the Alex Kovalev signing, nothing's happened exciting with this team. You know, off ice anyways. In what, a decade?
Well, I mean, the off season 2 years ago was pretty exciting.
Yeah, but, I mean, which of these players did we get that blew you away? Was it Scott Gomez? I mean,
the Cammy signing.
That
was
a good signing. Yes. The Mike Camilleri signing was the only good one. Well, Gianta, but, you know, it was the only one that really made you go, oh, okay, they brought in somebody here. Which, I mean, they had to. The entire team left.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. And, you know, I think the thing is, there's only a handful of GMs in the NHL that are great at what they do. There's a handful of GMs that are lousy at what they do. And the rest are kind of in that middle. And that's who we have right now, is a guy who's in the middle. I think Gainey was well above average. I almost put Gainey in that elite category. I don't think Gauthier's as good, but, you know, Gainey didn't want to stick around. It's not like he got fired.
Yeah, no, so I know.
I think they wanted a guy who, you know, they looked around, they thought he was decent, and I agree with you. I'd like to get someone who's a little more innovative, a little more outside the box, and, you know, someone who's... It'd be nice to make a splash, like you said, but I think they're in a bit of a holding pattern. They'll see what Gauthier can do, and then see what the next guy brings us. I really think that's the reasoning behind it.
Did you get a chance? Did you hear anything that Pierre McGuire said when he was talking to Mitch Melnick on TSN 990? His opinion on Gauthier?
I did.
Have you heard some of the from the reaction to that?
I have.
I haven't heard him that hyped up over someone, a non-player, in I don't know the long time that I've been hearing Pierre McGuire's opinion on things.
Yeah, he was fired up and ready to go, and I don't know if he was, you know, that was sort of his way of lobbying for the job, which is what some people speculated. Yeah. But he was really fired up.
Would you want Pierre McGuire?
No.
No?
No. I think, I mean, putting aside whether you like him as a broadcaster or not.
Yeah, that's a different ball game. Yeah.
It is a completely different ball game. I think he knows the game, but he's also been outside the game for a long time. And, you know, being knowledgeable as a journalist and being knowledgeable about really the intricacies of running a team and the cap management and all that, those are two different things. And, you know, maybe it would work out, but that's a big risk. There's been a lot of guys in a lot of different sports who've tried to make the jump from the booth to the front office, and it's usually not very successful.
And then you've got guys who somehow made the jump from the front office to the booth, been absolutely terrible, and still have a job, Mike Milbury.
How about Mike Milbury, next Habs GM? What do you think?
Oh, my God. If the Canadians hired Mike Milbury as the GM, since I now live in Toronto, I'd switch allegiances. I hate Milbury that much.
From a comedy standpoint, I'm fully on board. But
how long before he trades Carey Price to Florida, and then PK Subban will go to the Senators? Michael Camilleri? Oh no, I guess it'd have to be a young. Maybe Max Pacioretty would also have to go to the Senators. My God, is he the worst GM at least of our generation?
Oh God, I can't. Yeah, I mean, Ferguson could maybe. you know, gave him a fight for his money. But yeah, Milbury, I boggles my mind how he had a job. It boggles my mind because he's almost as bad on TV as he was in the front office.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, drunk fantasy managers make better moves than Mike Milbury did. And then somehow we're supposed to listen to his opinion on television like it matters at all. Why would I want him and PJ Stock? Why do we got to hear them?
Don't ask me.
Well, I am asking you. You're supposed to have the answers.
I'm supposed to have the answer, but I don't. I don't get it. I get he was a popular player, I guess, back in the day, but you can only milk that for so long.
Yeah, you can only milk the fact that you climbed into the stands and hit a guy with a shoe for so long.
If that happens, you've gotten a lot of mileage out of that.
If that happens in the modern era, you're just removed from the game forever. But somehow, because of when it happened, he's a hero for it.
Oh yeah, I mean the game really has changed.
You can't climb into the stands and hit anybody with their own shoe anymore. It's bullshit. Good old games gone. Used to be able to beat fans, you know. Things have changed. All right, what else? You got something else you want to address?
Well, just, you know, back to, and I don't really want to get into this, but I mean, back to the GM issue. I mean, there's a lot of good candidates out there, but they're automatically eliminated from the job.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's the topic that we could get deep into.
We could, and, you know, I don't really want to get into it for a lot of different reasons, but a guy like Steve Yzerman, you look at what he's done in Tampa Bay in a really short period of time. I mean, and I think that team's headed places, I think he is going to be one of the league's best GMs for, you know, 20 years maybe. And really, there's no reason that the Habs couldn't have made a run at him except for the fact that his last name is Yzerman.
Yeah.
And like I said, I don't want to get into it, but it does make the job more difficult when you cut your talent pool in about a quarter.
And like you say, I mean, it's not worth getting into because it's not an argument that you can have, because no matter what, no matter where your opinion falls, it's just not going to happen in Montreal. It's just not going to happen. Unless the Nordiques come back, then maybe the Canadiens don't have to carry that Franco flame so high. Maybe then. But it's just not going to happen. And I don't agree with it. I don't like it. I think we should be able to... You look at the greats in Montreal Canadiens history... They couldn't speak that much French sometimes, but the way the game is now, I mean, this is how we have to play it. So we have to accept that as Habs fans, that's the way it is. You don't have to like it, but you have to live with it.
Yeah, exactly. And look, I think, you know, had they hired Yzerman, I think the vast majority of Habs fans would have been okay with it.
Yeah.
But there's just a really vocal minority that you're going to piss off.
And oh, yeah. I mean,
it's just not worth the headache.
What if we get a Stanley Cup? Is it worth the headache then?
Yeah, I know. And look, but I mean, like you said, it is what it is. And basically, the point I'm trying to make isn't so much about Iverson, and it's not even a language thing. I'm just saying the job's harder.
Yeah.
When you eliminate a lot of talented candidates right off the top of the bat.
Okay, but there was one guy who could have been our head coach, who fits the bill perfectly, and I think it's probably the biggest screw up of this organization that they've done in a long, long time, and that was letting Guy Boucher get away.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean,
is that not a fireable offense of Ralph Nader right there?
Yeah, I mean, he is the best young coach in the game, without a doubt. And, the thing that makes it even more annoying is that everyone knew. Everyone was saying, this guy is a genius. You know, he's going to not reinvent the game. But, I mean, the guy's a really, really good up-and-coming head coach. Everyone knew that, and we still let him go away.
And he's got a kick-ass scar.
He does.
I mean, come on.
From what I hear, I guess the Habs were tired of being basically a feeder system to the rest of the NHL because they saw Vigneault kind of struggle in Montreal and then Bloom elsewhere. Same with Claude Julien. Same, I guess, with Michel Therrien.
So instead, we're just going to feed the rest of the NHL a little earlier.
I guess, yeah. Because, I mean, Boucher would have been perfect. And, you know, he's the type of guy who, I don't know, maybe you hire him young and he's your coach for 13 years and that doesn't happen often anymore.
No, but, I mean, if there's one guy, you've got this guy... He could speak French. He's exciting. He seems to fit the bill of what a coach of Montreal should be, at least in my opinion. And to have him now in Tampa Bay, and like you say, I really hope for some reason things go terribly in Tampa Bay this season or next in time for him to Yzerman to cut ties. But like you say, I don't think Yzerman's a dumb guy. In fact, I think he's a very intelligent hockey mind. Guy Boucher and Steve Yzerman are probably going to be a team that's going to get Tampa Bay a cup in the next 4 or 5 years. And at that point, you know, those are two huge swings and misses by the organization.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I love how we're still bitching about the coaching and the GM despite the three wins. But, I guess that's kind of a, where we want to be, though. At least we're not suddenly all high and loving Martin and Gauthier just because they beat Philly and Boston for a few games.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said at the top of the podcast, I don't take back a single thing I said about Jacques Martin. He's, like, we know he's, well, to use the word I used before, he's serviceable. He's had success to a certain extent, but he just wasn't an inspiring coach. You know, his coaching style is boring. His beloved system is boring. And maybe it wins more games than it loses, but it's just such an uninspiring choice.
I just,
and, you know, Gauthier, I'm not as down on Gauthier as I am on Martin, but it's the same sort of dynamic.
Just to reflect on your word serviceable, if I may. Serviceable, there's three girls left at the bar at the end of the night. The best looking one is the one you take home because she's serviceable. That's still not where you want to be when you wake up in the morning.
I do not want to be taking home any woman that looks like Jacques Martin.
Well, now this is where we disagree. I don't like him as a coach, but the man's a looker.
He is a looker.
He's no Carbonell.
Oh, God.
Speaking of great-looking lookers. All right. Well, let's do this thing.
And they're all coming off. Both benches are empty. And we're going to have a Donnybrook right down below us here as both benches empty.
All right, so this is 5 minutes for fighting on the 2-4, MontrealBias.com. Our guest today, known online as Puck Sage. How are you, sir?
I am great. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for coming on.
Pretty simple. I'm Mike. I'm a lifelong Bruins fan, which means I pretty much hate everyone who ever wears a Canadiens uniform.
Fair enough.
I've almost forgiven Hal Gill, but maybe not.
So, all right, we'll start off with the friendliness. What was it like at the end of last season when you guys hoisted the cup?
It was beautiful. Honestly, I thought Game 7 of the Canucks series was anticlimactic. It certainly didn't compare to Game 7 against the Canadiens. That was just one of the best series I've seen.
Sorry, we seem to be losing you there.
Nope, I'm still here. Game 7 against the Canucks, nowhere near as good as the Game 7 against Montreal.
Did your heart sink for a second, or even a few minutes, when P.K. Subban scored less than two to go in that Game 7? I mean, just knowing what the Bruins and the Canadiens have been through over and over and over through all the history, were you sitting there for a second and thinking, it's happening again?
Absolutely. There's no one in Boston who can't say that they didn't and weren't. I was talking to two or three of my friends. There were four or five of us in the room and a couple of people on Twitter. It was stunning.
But I mean, all right, so is the monkey off the back now, or did these two losses this past week sting just as much?
I don't think that the sting in the Bruins-Canadiens rivalry will ever go away. They would have to place the two teams in separate conferences and see each other every 5 years, and I'm not even sure that would do it. For example, guys like David Krejci, I believe he has two NHL fights to his name, both of them against Canadiens. Going back a couple of years, PJ Axelsson had two fights in the same game against Canadiens, and I think that may be the only time he ever dropped the gloves in 11 years in the NHL. It's just one of those rivalries that is so good for hockey and so entertaining for fans.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, sometimes you get a rivalry that, you know, seems like, well, Montreal and Toronto for right now. It's coming back a little bit. I think people are feeling a little bit more animosity there for real. But on the other hand, this one permeates through everything. I mean, there's no lying. The players on these two teams hate each other as much as the fans seem to.
I don't think you could get, say, Sean Thornton to say, you know, four nice words in a row about anyone on the Canadiens if you paid him. And he's a pretty honest guy.
All right, so you've got your cup, you're feeling good, but the season starts out slow. What's wrong with the Bruins right now?
I think some people probably aren't in the best condition. Part of that is just the long, long postseason. I mean, they played an extra quarter season. And look at how young most of this team is. Almost everyone's 25, 26 or under. Most people are getting out of college at 25, 26. If you hand someone their life's dream at 26, how much motivation are they really going to have 3 months later? But yeah, there's a couple of players who I kind of expected this from, and it's showing.
Well, just observing, I mean, from outside, from the Montreal standpoint, I can't recall a team partying and celebrating, and deservedly so, a Stanley Cup as much as it seemed that these Bruins did in the offseason.
As much as you hear about the Red Sox or the Patriots or the Celtics when the NBA remembers to have a season, hockey is really, really big in New England. It hasn't gotten the attention that it deserves because, well, the Bruins weren't contending for a long time. The Bruins parade was bigger than the Red Sox parade, bigger than the Patriots parade, bigger than the Celtics parade. It's the largest celebration in Boston history. I don't think they could have escaped the celebrations thrown by the public for them without a trip to the moon. I'm not even sure that would have done it. You can't walk into any town, walk downtown anywhere, go into any mall without seeing Bruins gear, and it was everywhere.
I think that's something perhaps we don't appreciate, just in Canada in general, is we tend to think that the NHL's a fourth sport in every city in the U.S., but that's not the case in the Northeast at all. I mean, the Bruins are very much a fabric of Boston sports.
Yes, if you actually look at the numbers for the NHL versus the NBA, in a lot of cities, the NHL across the U.S. has pulled in better ticket sales and better TV viewership in a lot of markets.
So let's get back to the on-ice. Claude Julien, I'm hearing rumors, I'm hearing rumblings, especially out of Boston, that he might be on the hot seat. But come on, there's no way that this guy can coach to a Stanley Cup and 10 games in suddenly his merit as a coach is being questioned.
That's a load of crap. Honestly, I think his season point average for the 4 years he's been in Boston is somewhere like 102 points for each season. He just won a Stanley Cup. The players who aren't playing well right now are the players who tend to have significant drop-offs during portions of their season.
All right, so what do you do if you're the general manager of the Bruins right now and you see the way... I mean, it's a Stanley Cup hangover. I think everybody kind of agrees that that's probably the main problem. What do you do with this team? Are you just sit and wait and wait for the natural talent that obviously got him a cup to come back around?
I probably would have been a little more aggressive during the offseason. I think I would have gone out and seen if I could get a first, second line center, someone who's aggressive, brings more of a spark with that 30 goal ability. As much as I love watching Brad Marchand play, and no one was sure exactly what to expect from Nathan Horton after being knocked out of the finals, I think that with the problems of the power play, which have been going on for a couple of years since, well, Savard was injured, I would have gone and grabbed a forward, whether by trade or by... or free agency that I thought could definitely contribute to the power play.
So you're saying that Benoit Pouliot is not that guy?
Shocking as it may sound, for a number four draft who has been discarded by two teams, I think that's the case.
That's a shame. We hated that you guys signed him. We were like, oh no, not in Boston. Of all the places we'd like to see him go.
I'm not sure what that one is. On the other hand, I think that there were probably worse players in the league, which says a lot.
I'll give you... There are worse players than Benoit Pouliot, though I don't know how many at this point. All right, so going forward, it's been a rough start. Do you think the Bruins turn it around, or is this going to be a... I mean, they're obviously not a last-place team. That's absolutely ridiculous. But is the Stanley Cup hangover going to be just a month or two in Boston, or is perhaps going to be a season-long thing?
I think you're seeing signs of some players coming out of it. If you looked at the comments in the Boston Herald today, Julian has started speaking favorably about Lucic, whose physical play is one of the things that the team counts on. You've seen more involvement from some of the other players.
Over the weekend, Julian seemed to be a little bit frustrated that with a lack of discipline, particularly with players towards PK Subban. Is there any chance he'll bench one of those guys in the coming games just to send a message?
I think you're seeing some minor benching. If you look at, say, Nathan Horton's minutes, he's averaging about 13 minutes a night right now. That's way, way down from what he was playing in the regular season last year, certainly down from what he was playing in the playoffs. David Krejci, again, 13.5 minute range. That's less than Tyler Seguin was playing for parts of last season. Granted, David Krejci has that mysterious core injury, which almost certainly is a groin pull, and probably conditioning related. I think you're going to see, I would personally like to see a couple of the Providence Bruins, who have been doing better this season, brought up for a game or two, either as auditions or trade bait. Just something to change the dynamic in the room. I think that certain people are taking things not seriously enough.
Is there any sense of real panic, or do you get to enjoy this for a while? I mean, when you're a Stanley Cup champion, how long before you actually care all that much?
We're still enjoying the Cup greatly, but I wouldn't call it so much panic as disappointment.
Right.
Everyone knows these players can play better. So far, there's, you know, both goalies have played well. The defense has been about where it should be. They could be doing one or two things better. But for the most part, it's been a four-forward show instead of a four-line show. And that's just not going to cut it.
All right, I'm going to let you go. What is your prediction for the rest of the season for the Bruins? Where do you see them finishing?
Well, beginning of the year, I said the finals in the East could come down to Buffalo and Washington, and out West it could come down to probably the Kings, and I'm not sure, probably just the Kings. They're that good, especially if Doughty's back whole. But I wouldn't be surprised to see the Bruins at least in the second round. They could make the Eastern Conference Finals again easily.
Who wouldn't love another Bruins-Habs playoff matchup?
They're always fun. There's nothing more dramatic. The only problem that I think I've seen from both teams historically is the hangover from that matchup, because there's just no other team that either side gets up for in the same way.
All right, well, thanks so much. I mean, I know there's a lot of animosity, but I appreciate you coming on the podcast. Just as we head out, let people know where they can find you on Twitter, on your website, and what they could be reading about coming up.
PucksAge.com, PucksAge on Twitter. I blog about just about everything. I'm going to start my rookie Calder Cup watch. Last year, I was comparing the rookies to Ilya Kovalchuk's not-so-very-good season. This year, you guys get to know first that it's going to be Eric Staal, who's off to probably the worst start of his career. And picking on the Canes is always fun.
You pick on the... Is that from the old Hartford days?
Hartford days, and in a lot of ways... I look at that team as being comprised of 18 Ole Samuelsons and Claude Lemieux.
All right, fair enough. All right, the alias is PucksAge. PucksAge.com is the website. Thanks a lot. This has been 5 minutes for fighting on the 2-4.
Take care.
So there you go. That was that. This is the point in the program. Well, first, before we get to our three stars, I guess we'll take a look at the week ahead for the Habs. Nothing till Friday when we are in Ottawa.
Yeah, in Ottawa Friday against the suddenly red-hot Senators.
Are they for
that
real?
That should be a really interesting game, actually.
We've discussed the realness of the Leafs and the Bruins. What about another one of our Northwestern friends, Northeastern friends? Are the Sens,
I think
Sean?
This too shall pass, but...
oh, come on. This was the worst team in the NHL at our preseason predictions. This is just, I don't know, lucky.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch. I mean, they've been a lot of fun to watch. And,
they're going
to
be better than we thought, I think.
Maybe.
Already they have half the wins I gave them.
I still think they might be the worst team in the league. So, you know, enjoy this little run while it lasts.
There must be Sens fans again, eh?
Yeah, they've doubled in numbers from 30 to 60. The band
coming out of the woodwork.
enjoy it while it lasts. So I don't think it's going to last all season, but, you know, it's a fun little stretch. And it's not going to be an easy game for the Habs because they are hot right now.
Yeah.
They're not a great team. So we got that on Friday, then back-to-back games Saturday against the Rangers. That's at Madison Square Garden.
They're struggling. They called up Sean Avery on re-entry waivers. Is he the fixer?
I can't see that. I mean, they got rid of him for a reason. Let's just put it that way.
Well, they brought him back. Maybe they'll hire Perry Pern, too. Two of the worst people in the world.
And then next Tuesday, this should be fun. Edmonton comes into town.
Oh, there's a fun team that might be legit. I mean, they're not the first place team in the West, but, you know, a lot of people had them once again as cellar dwellers, and they seem to be clicking. And, you know, there's a little bit more legitimacy to them because they at least have future superstars on that team right now who are playing like we expect them to in the future.
Yeah, and I think I made this point last podcast is that, you know, sometimes it's not a steady climb upward. Sometimes you suck, and then it all sort of clicks. Kind of happened to the Capitals, kind of to a lesser extent happened with the Penguins, and Edmonton's got a lot of young talent there. There's still going to be growing pains, but I think they're, like you said, quasi-legit.
Nugent Hopkins, I mean, the Nuge, as they're calling him, seems to have adjusted very well to the NHL game.
Yeah, and for a guy who, I mean, obviously was the number one pick, but he came in with relatively little buzz for a number one guy overall, but he's been a lot of fun to watch.
I'm excited for that one.
I am too.
I haven't actually watched them this year.
Team to watch. And then finally next Thursday, the Coyotes were at Phoenix, one of those 9 o'clock puck drops.
The Yotes are an easier team to beat now that they don't have Brizgalov.
Yeah, although, you know, Tippett's a really good coach, and they still play that, you know, kind of Jacques Martin style, actually kind of boring, trappish type team. But
so if you want to skip a game.
Yeah, if you want to skip the 9 o'clock puck drop against the always thrilling Phoenix Coyotes in front of a crowd of about 4,000.
What night is that?
That is next Thursday, November 10th.
Next Thursday. All right, take us in the Saturday. What do we got after that?
Then Hockey Night in Canada, and nothing says Hockey Night in Canada like Montreal and Nashville.
There it is. It's the matchup we've all been waiting for. Although two great goalies.
Yeah, two great goalies.
Two of the great goalies in the game going head-to-head, Rene and Price. So at least it'll be that. I assume Budaj is going to probably start one of those two back-to-backers, though it's hard to say which he'll get the call for.
Yeah, I mean, he looked good, actually, in the one start we gave
him.
And like I said, I don't think anyone wants to see Carey play 72 games again. So
Carey would like to.
He probably would.
Yeah, I think so. All right, let's do our three stars. You went first last week, so I'm going to go first this time, if that's okay.
I'll allow it.
All right, thanks. Number three, I talked about him earlier. He's been catching my eye and I was a roller coaster with this kid in Boston against Boston on Saturday night, because at times he looked like one of our best players on the ice, and other times he was actually very frustrating, and that's Lars Eller. So he's my third star, though, for he had a pretty big game. He could have had a couple goals at least if he hadn't completely missed one there. Number two, a guy who he didn't quite get any of the pressure that was going to come down on him at any minute, simply because things were looking so bad right across the board for Montreal. But very excited. I was watching with Alex Dezan, who's one of our contributors on the Montreal Bias on Friday and Saturday against the Bruins. Or rather, sorry, Thursday and Saturday against the Bruins. And Eric Cole suddenly seems like that player that we haven't had in a long, long time. His size, but I mean, I didn't realize that he's got some finesse out there as well. He's not just.
I mean, he's a big guy.
Yeah, but he moves.
He's not
well.
This big hulking power forward. He's got some speed.
Oh, he's when he gets in. I've noticed when he gets in the circle there, he could be very dangerous. Sarah Cole's my number two guy because I really liked what he did, and I think going forward, the more comfortable he gets with Jacques Martin's system, and the more he figures out just with his line mates, he's gonna be pretty much close to worth his money. Unlike some people on the team, and number one, who am I to disagree with the NHL? Carey Price. And that's it.
Yeah,
that needs
enough.
No explanation.
I, very similar three stars, to be honest with you.
Well, I'm sure. Mine are accurate, so we'll just find out how inaccurate you are. Inaccurate
just for the sake of mixing things up a little bit, my third star, I'll go off the board, and we talked about this gent as well, but Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, it's been a lot of fun to watch. He's, I guess, if you want to start handicapping these things already, he's the early favorite for the Calder Trophy. And, you know, Edmonton's my new... every year, obviously, I watch all the Habs games, and then every year I kind of try and find another team that's DVR-worthy, and I think it's the Oilers this year. Number two, Lars Eller. Like you said, we're finally starting to see flashes of the player Montreal traded for. There's still going to be growing pains. Like I said, maybe, you know, you can make the argument he still deserves to be in Hamilton, but the talent is there. We didn't see much of it last year, but there were glimpses, and like I said, those glimpses are getting more frequent. So that's been nice to see, especially, you know, with Halak really struggling in St. Louis. And number one, Eric Cole. Like you said, you know, the worst case scenario was that he comes here, he's slow out of the gate, goes whatever, 7-8 games without a goal, and everyone just starts piling on. He got off to a slow start, but it was a little bit under the radar because everyone got off to a slow start, and he has been great these last couple games.
No,
still stuck in only two goals, I believe, but he's a lot of chances and just looked really, really good. And, you know, if Martin starts using him a little more intelligently, you know, I think we're in line for a typical 25-30 goal season from Mr. Cole.
Well, I know we finally saw 8 minutes of power play time from EC on Saturday night, so that's good. Even though
that is good, because it was about time.
Even though he only had, how many goals did he have last year on the power play? It's 3. Thank you, Jacques Martin, for that genius insight. Guy can score 26 goals. For some reason, he can't score on the power play. Come on! Ridiculous. So that'll do it. It's another podcast in the bank.
Another one in the books. The next one, it won't be as long as a wait for the next one.
No.
But we got this one in a good time with coming off 3 straight wins and a bit of a gap before the next game.
And I want to give you props. There's a great article right now on the site, which obviously you're on because you found this thing. Sean's got one called Money Puck. It's about the advanced statistics in the NHL, and well worth the read. So I say check that one out. And we'll have another edition of our 24/7 HBO The Montreal Canadiens, our exclusive look at a script that doesn't exist for a show that's not being filmed. That'll be we'll have that out this week. And other than that, it might be, who knows what we got coming up this week, simply because there's not much besides off-ice stuff to speculate about. Nothing till Friday, which I hate.
That's always fun, the wild, rampant, baseless speculation.
We should just make that a regular
column.
Looking
forward to a week of that.
Hey, speaking of that,
throwing trade rumors out there for no reason.
Kyle Turris.
Yeah.
There's talk. At least there's the Canadians are interested, they're saying. Although Phoenix doesn't seem like they're going to move him, at least the Canadians have expressed interest.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably about 20 teams kicking the tires at this point, but at least they're in the mix.
Well, the leaders were all Canadian. Calgary, Montreal,
really?
Toronto, and Ottawa, apparently. The team's interested.
Interesting. I think he's obviously worth taking a flyer on. The guy
he's only 22.
Overall.
He's 22 years old. Hard to argue.
Interesting. We'll see if anything comes of it. But
in the world of wild speculation, since it's Phoenix and they're probably way under the cap, we can throw him Scotty Gomez and Andre Kostitsyn.
I'll even throw in Jacques Martin for Keith Yandel. How's that?
Brilliant. Such a good deal. All right, tell the people goodbye.
Oh, goodbye.